is it any intentional force of the past lives? I mean,
no, that's another statement.
Anyway, so, and he's going to tell us about secrets, connecting, flat things, and secret things. Thank you. So, I'm going to start with a few apologies. So, I'm going to be giving this talk for the next 2 months, about 10 times. And it's the first time, so this is kind of a trial talk. It's just never the best one. First of all, so you have to So I want to apologize. So there are some things I underestimated the fact that you think you can really know PowerPoint. So not everything is completely finished and polished. In particular, I think it's bigger for the references. So I apologize in advance if I miss slide or I omit slide somebody, especially during the universe. And yeah. And I think, the other thing is I think I have too much material. So we'll see how it goes and make sure we're just coming out after 1 hour. And if there's stuff that you're interested in, I'm happy to discuss it with them. But I don't want to keep you longer than necessary. Okay. So this is based on these two recent papers up here. Okay, so with Henry and the other part of it out, and also some background based on some of the respective people's papers, So, let me clarify the methodology. So, super symmetric dust is what we want to know. It's a super symmetric, asymptotically flat, stationary black hole solution to five dimensional supergravity. With horizon topology, with an event horizon topology as one of the two. So of course, in string theory or F theory, we have 5 dimensions, but 10 or 11. So when you add those extra dimensions, what these objects really are black super cubes. So I'm going to start with super cubes. And then I'll end up with brackets. I'm going to start with 2 charges. As we see, I explained what I mean by this. As we see, we need 3 charges to actually generate a supersymmetric black hole. But I want to start with these objects because they are, for example, really close. So consider the synthesis. So a supercube is just a synthesis example of the supersymmetric gradient, which takes place in flat space and is induced by ambient. So the synthesis example, in my opinion, is starting with a system of fundamental strings with these degrees, which prefers effective theory, which prefers 1.6. The claim is that if you add a new object to the system, you will expand one physical supersymmetry to a tubular bound state in which a different brain has been generated. And in this description, the original charges, the fundamental string and the disjoint charges appear as dissolved fluxes, electric and magnetic fluxes performing in the field on the digital brain. And they generate the angular momentum through the pointing vector. So if you take a cross product of the electric and magnetic fields, that gives you a linear momentum density, tangent cross section, which when you integrate it from the cross section, gives you the net angular. Of course, because the system is supersymmetric, the energy is given by the sum of the charges. One thing that came as a slight surprise to us was that the cross-section, you might have thought, needs to be circular in order to achieve stability of supersymmetry, but that's not true. The cross-section can be any curve in the transverse dimensions. And I'll give you, now. So the easiest way to understand why this is the case is to realize that you dualize along the axis of the cube. And then as you dualize, you end up, and you won't believe some of these about this later, but the actual is you end up with a fundamental string along the direction of the string. We have wave points that's moving only, say, the right or left direction, and it's traveling the string. And it's well known that that's a smart code, as long as the object's side right on that moving. Now, one thing that's really important is that even though a D2 brain is generated, There's no negative charge that's created in the process without being created by charge. And the reason for that is very easy to understand, because the cross-section being contractible, the relatively trivial, each side, opposite sides of the cross-section behave as little pairs of grains. So the total charge just cancels, and there's no conflict with charge potential in the expansion. However, there is a little grain in there, so we will see that there's no monopole between the charge, but there are dipole charges at high monopole modes. So, what I'm giving to you here is that the description of the two charge supergroup, if we ignore the back reaction of the system on space time. So, what you think is the curl if you bring, we describe it with a camcorder and you reflect. The long range gravity of the supergroup system. And in this description, it's really easy to see that the radius, and I'm specifying now the circular cross section for simplicity. So the radius and the angular momentum are completely fixed in terms of the charges and the dipole. So I'm not going to be distinguishing between the charges and the number of grains. So these Qs and little Q are quantized in integer units, but I won't be making that distinction most of the time. So if you specify the number of strings, it's the range, and the grains are completely determined to the angular momentum of the radius. That's for a supercube. However, for a general system which may involve supercubes and extra charge that's not bound, which is possible because of the DPS property of the system, namely the fact that you can have arbitrary extra charges at any distance from the cube, even superposed to the cube, but not bound to the cube. Those charges contribute, of course, to the global charge, but not to the radius or the angular moment. So in a general system, and it's rare to speak to the probabilities, those quantities in the right-hand side are just afterbounds for the angle. Or if you eliminate the number of V2 grains, then you can rewrite the bound on the angle of the numbers. Any questions so far? Okay, so that's the warbling description. Now, let's see. So what I'm presenting here now is the superiority description of the system. So this description that captures the long-range supergravity fields, gravitational gauge fields sort of like this system. So I've written down the solution, but I don't expect you to pay attention to all the details. I just want to draw your attention to a few things. So here you have the time direction, the set direction, which is the direction of the axis of the cube, and the axis here, parameterize the transfer space on which the cross section lies. So you see that there is a metric, there is an NS less 2 form, as you would expect from the presence of strings, and there are 1 and 3, so there are more than 1 and 3 forms associated to the rest of these here of the equals. So the metric is completely specified by 2 functions, U and V, which depend on the transverse coordinates, and a rotation 1 form following. So these two functions can be, are, in order for this to be a solution of planetary supergravity, must be harmonic, or PA. And that means, because the harmonic condition is a linear condition, that you can construct her simply by linear superposition along the cross section of the cube of the corresponding string charge that's integrated with the corresponding harmonic function. And the same is true for omega, which must satisfy the free mass equation on E8. So the message here is that the solution is really easy to construct for any cross-section by computing these integrals because of the linearity of the linearization of the equations once it goes to zero. Now, if you integrate through the appropriate spheres and infinity, the corresponding classes, you realize that this constant sphere, U1, U0, etc., corresponds to measure of the string and the linear rate characters. If you look at the behavior of the metric of omega at infinity, you realize that the angular momentum is given by this formula, which is exactly the same formula we have from the world of industry. And of course, the mass is again given by the standard charges, respective. As I said, we don't expect there to be any net inflow of charges. We expect high multiple models. And that's very easy to verify. So I'm going to be working throughout the talk informally as most of the time. So the transfer cross-section relies, the transfer space will be most of the time for the data to be four-dimensional. So we split it into two planes, two orthogonal two planes, and I'll use four coordinates in each of the two planes. So here R and rho are these radial coordinates, psi is the coordinate along the polar coordinate in the plane of the ring, or the cross-section, and I'm suppressing the other angular coordinate in the plane. So if you look at the asymptotic behavior far away from source, all the field effect that's sourced by the little rays, you can convince yourself that it falls off with one power of distance higher than you would expect, that it would be necessary in order for it to contribute to the medium net charge. So what I'm saying is that if you compute this integral here, you always get zero because the field falls off very fast. However, you see that it has the right structure to be interpreted as a dipole moment, as opposed to a monopole. And that's, again, easy to understand, as I said. If you integrate over a sphere at infinity over here, that sphere, you can turn that integral into an integral over the disk inside the sphere, and that disk intersects the cube at two points at which you have opposite charges. That's why they become zero. However, if you shrink the integral to the point at which you only intersect the cube at one point, then that measures the net number of D2. So that's what measures the little cube. And that's no cube. So finally, so I'm just trying to go through how you reproduce all the features in Socratic description that we previously saw in the Warbling description. The bound of the angular momentum is recovered by demanding that there are no closed causal curves. So if you look at the norm of V by D psi in this metric, if this bound is violated, that becomes time-like, close enough to the source. And because that's the periodic coordinate, we have closed angular curves. And finally, because the equations for the functions U and V and for omega are linear, it is completely trivial to construct multiple superposition of cubes or cubes of arbitrary construction. Okay, any questions on that so far? Okay, so one of the reasons why these systems are interesting is because they are connected to a web of dualities, to the D1-D5 system. In the case of two charges, in the case of three charges, they are connected to the D1-D5 to the momentum system, which is the first set of brain charges for which you have to be able to use microscopically in string theory. So that's a lot of features. So let me quickly go through the web of dualities that takes to the D1-D5 system. So we start with the supercube. If you dualize along the direction of the cube, then the D0 and the D2, that's the bound state. So that gives you a D1 at a certain angle. This D1 is going around solving the cross section in the psi direction. So basically, you get net D1 charge from the axis and only D1 lightning along the side. So you get a field of D string. And the string just turns into momentum. If you then add a few more directions by dualizing, you get a D5 momentum system. If you now S-dualize, you turn the D5s into S5s. And now here, this is a crucial step. If you dualize along the direction of the first direction here, you see that you have an S5 here that's going to turn, is the remaining variant because you're dualizing along one of these four directions. But the NS5 that's orthogonal to that direction is going to turn into a pentagonal monopole, whose human fiber is precisely the direction on which your teeth works. Okay. And so that's a crucial step because now, by another trivial T1 and an S1, you can map the system to the file, deal the file, in the system with deal the file charges, and into the client module that has no net charge that, that's there. And then it was shown by Looney, Balasena, and Laos that this solution, so if you remove the deal file module, and you come back to file 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 directions, this supergraphic switch is simple because the this circle in the one direction shrinks to zero size as you get to the horizon. However, in the presence of the multiplied model, because that circle is non-trivially fibered over the S2 times to the ring, that just gives rise to a completely smooth geometry for the process one multiplied model. At your, so this gives rise to a complete transfer geometry with these charges, given all the time. Okay, so that's more or less everything I wanted to say for the recharge case. Let me now discuss the recharge case. I'm going to start with the supergravity description. Because the word volume description, one of the geometry issues here is the word volume description cases. So the idea is the following. Let's first go to a different frame. Let's get to a theory, the two charge case. So if you do a couple of things like this and look into 11 dimensions, you can view the supercube as a system in which two orthogonal N2 rings expand to give you an N5 ring with no net charge, which is like. Okay. So the idea now is that if you start not with two but three orthogonal N2 rings, then each of them, each pair of N2 rings is going to expand when you have angular momentum to give you a different N5 ring. So for example, the first two will give you the N5 ring at bottom, the first and the third will give you the second one, and the last two will give you the first one. That's the idea. I'm going to take the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 directions, which are fat, so it's kind of 6 curves. And the I'm going to be using spherical coordinates in the transfer directions. So psi is going to be the direction common for the N5 rings. And this is going to be what direct the circle of the ring. And then phi is going to be the orbit of the program. So the dimensional metric takes this form. There's a five-dimensional piece, which is the black, symmetric black-green piece that I'll show you in a second. And then there are these factors here, corresponding to each of these pair of directions. The volume factors in front are completely specified in terms of three factors. That, remember, for the two charge case, we have two factors in the piece. Now we have three of them. The five-dimensional piece is given by this expression here. So again, it's specified by these three functions and a rotation one from omega. And now these functions are given by these expressions here, where sigma is this expression in terms of r and theta, which means that this first bit here, obviously 1 plus this first bit, is a harmonic function with sources on the ring. But the functions themselves, because of these extra bits, are not harmonic. So, in principle, it's not trivial, it's not going to be trivial to construct multiple transformations. Because the equation is called that these functions are non-linear. I'm not going to give you the expression for omega, but I just want to emphasize that unlike the previous case in which omega only had a component, in the plane of the cross section of the ring, here omega has a component in that plane and in the orthogonal. So the solution is going to vary two of that as well. And now there's also the 11 dimensional field form, the gauge field, that takes this from here where these A's are given by some expression. What's important is that by again looking at the appropriate integrals of infinity or around the ring, In fact, the Gospels QI, the big Qs and the big Qs, correspond to the empty charges from the other time angles. And I'm going to define these calligraphic Qs, which are these concatenations here. And these are very important because these are the quantities which enter, which will enter the entry, the expression for the entry. If you require that these would-be harmonic functions are all positive and that there are no causal pathologies, then you have to require that these Qs are positive. And I'm also going to define this little Q to be the front of the little Qs to the one. Okay, so that was the. I just wanted to show you the solutions. That was probably a very nice fallacy. Let me now analyze the physical properties. So the solution preserves four supercharges. It's 1S per symmetry less than dimensions. It's stationary, the five dimensional bit, well, the solution is stationary and the five dimensional bit is symmetrically flat. So, and the independent conserved charges are the three gauge charges, the capital Qs, and two angular momenta which are given by these expressions here, psi and psi phi. And what's really important is that you see immediately from this expression that j psi is always greater than j phi. Okay. The only case in which they are equal is when you set r to 0. And we will see that r equals 0 is not a black green solution. It's actually a green solution. But I'll get back to that. The mass is not an independent conserved charge because it's fixed by the EPS functions and the rest of the gauge charges. And then if you require that there are no closed Kirchhoff curves, that's equivalent, that happens even only if this quantity here is always positive. So you can view this bound either as an upper bound on R, as in the case of the two charge supercube, or as an upper bound on the difference between J psi and J phi. And what's really important is that if L squared is strictly positive, then the five-dimensional metric has a completely regular event horizon at the location of the source, or at the moving location of the source. Of topology S1 plus S2. So what happens is that in the full metric, each of the points on the source gets blown out to a finite size to skew. Excuse me. The metric on the horizon takes this form. So L squared here sets the physical circumferential length of the circle. And Q, this combination of the dipole charges, sets the radius of the two spheres. And the area is of course given by this expression. Pretty much of capital R. Yeah, so capital R is a parameter in the solution that does not correspond to the physical size in the real metric. The physical size of the ring. It's a parameter that enters the solution from the independent factor. And it's independent of the rest. Yes, I'll get back to that a little bit later. So the solution is completely, to specify the solution, you have to specify the three capital Qs, the three little Qs, and R. So to give you an example of what the entropy looks like in terms of the charges, let me set all the gauge charges to be equal and all the dipole charges to be equal. In that case, the two angular momenta are given by these expressions. And the area is given up here. L squared takes this expression as the condition for absence of closed Kirchhoff curve is this one here. So this is a plot of the area on this axis. Here. As a function of the two angular momenta, J psi and J phi. Okay? So this boundary here corresponds, the fact that there are no black rings beyond that point, beyond this boundary, corresponds to the fact that J psi always has to be greater than J phi. This boundary over here corresponds to the limit in which the physical radius of the circle shrinks to zero size. And it's interesting or peculiar, and this is kind of intuitive to me, that the radius of that circle can go to zero while the associated other momentum could be made from zero. And the boundary down here corresponds to the fact that is the limit in which any pi goes to zero. So that's the case in which the two sphere frequency. And this surface extends to infinity all the way up here. So let me address now, go back to your question, and discuss the issue of black hole limits for these solutions. So as I said, to completely specify the solution, you have to specify seven parameters. The three charges, the three dipole charges, and R. But the solution only carries five independent net charges, which are the H charges, the Qs, the capital Qs, and two angular momenta, because remember that the mass is fixed in terms of the charges. So this means that because there are seven parameters, but only five charges, I could vary two parameters while keeping the five charges, the five conserved charges fixed. So these solutions, these family of solutions, displace infinite non-uniqueness at the classical level, which is parameterized by two continuous variables. Okay? So these black rings have a lot of variables. They have infinitely many curves. So it's very illustrative then to keep all the charges fixed. So let's keep the and set for simplicity all the capital Qs to people and fix the two angular momenta. And then plot the area or the entropy probably as a function of the two free variables, let's say two of the little Qs. So this is what you get. So the little Qs here are normalized in order to be values from 0 to infinity. And the boundary, so each of these plots, as I said, corresponds to fixed global charges. But the first one has a given shape, phi, which is smaller than the second one, which is smaller than the third one. Okay? So you see that this boundary here corresponds to the condition that there are no closed circles. That's why there are no black rings outside that region. And the darker region corresponds to smaller area. So the first thing you see is that I already told you that these solutions violate by two continuous variables uniqueness. You could say, well, let's try to see, even if you impose the extra requirement, which is not something usually imposed in the uniqueness schemes, even if you impose that you're going to do the solution with the same global charges and the same entropy, you still have an infinite number of them parameterized by one variable. So if you fix the entropy, that means that you're looking at a given contour of these plots. Okay, so you still have an infinite number of solutions.
There's always a muscle.
Yes. So thank you. That's my next. So except if you look, if you imagine that the entropy be massive, then there is only one black ring. That's the maximum black ring that satisfies the equation. And of course, in the quantum theory, both the global charges and the dipole charges, because they measure numbers of rings, they are quantized, continuing quantized. And that together, remember with the condition I told you that the capital Qs have to be greater than these products here. Remember what gives you the non-uniqueness is the fact that you can vary the little Qs by keeping the capital Qs fixed. But if all of them have to be integer quantized, then there's only finitely many little Qs that you have available for a fixed capital. So in that case, the non-uniqueness is fine. Right? It's fine. And the speed, of course. Okay. So let me now describe. So that's more or less looking at what you're saying. Sorry.
I think I missed something else. Could you show us that it has a function? that has never been consumed.
Say that fee,
yes, you were right.
So why is that not a red point if you're not going to be?
Oh, you're looking at the food charge case? Or the,
okay, so yeah, let me clarify here.
So in the food charge case, you don't get bag holes or bag frames.
So the thing there?
So either the solution, I mean, a certain frame, the first one I showed, you would like to leave where you had easy to rain and the state, that's in. As I explained, if you go through the web of running case, so this solution up here, that's secure. This one down here is not secure, but it has no horizon. So this is a secure, from previously right, it's been horizon fixed solution. But nevertheless, here is gauge changes.
So does it have an infinite?
So infinite? Yes. So this is an infinite non-uniqueness corresponding to the arbitrary function, which is the function that specifies the process. And since you, I wasn't planning to mention this, but since you asked, there is an entire program that's been pushed by Sandina Zulu. He wants to show that you can actually associate a classical gravity solution to each of the microstates in the dual safety description of the systems. And of course, each of these classical solutions has to be horizon-free. Okay, horizon field, you don't know that you can get that equation. So the entropy just comes from all the possible choices of cross-section that you have. And a problem developed with that is that if you actually, so classically, you have an infinite uniqueness because this you have an arbitrary function. You can do a semi-classical formulation of the system, and that will discretize the number of choices for this function. And if you do that, you exactly reduce the number of states in the microcomputing system. That will provide the narrow understanding. But yeah, the classical level for these systems you have is given it was associated with the arbitrary function. For the three, this is for the two charge case where you have no horizons. For the three charge case.
One thing, the two charge case, that was the regular solution without an horizon.
Yes.
But you said it was dual to something you have seen already?
Yes.
For the duality.
Yeah,
that's what they're doing very
soon. Yeah,
they're doing
very
soon.
Which is unpublished paper for normal.
This is the
published. Like that gets more useful.
Yeah, so, okay, so if you remove the truth planning model, then the solution has a secret horizon. Or if you wish, it has a would be horizon zero area. So it has no classical area. And Batur has been able to show that in that case, you still have some vision errors in the microscopic description from one house. And if you're able to map its microscopic, its microscope to a classical aspect, where the three classical switches are as many features of the first. And this program is to try to show that you can actually do that for an honest black hole, which is a three charge case. Because in that case, you have a finite classical entropy, some horizon of finite entropy. That's this program, not my problem. So, if anything, I think the existence of the supersymmetric black rings. Just put a little bit more pressure on this problem because that means to find a microspace for also the most platforms. So the library is not only constructed.
Maybe what Dan is talking about, there's no horizon in this.
In the two charge space, there's no horizon.
I think that Dan is.
You actually didn't use neither the CFT description nor the superior description. You use both the word bubble description. The word bubble description. Use the anchor reflection. Linearize that around the superfix solution. Semi-classically contacts and counting the number of states. And got exactly the same entropy as you get in the superfix solution. I don't know if this is clarifying or confusing.
There's no horizon.
There's no horizon, but there's still a microscopic, so there's no macroscopic entropy, but there's a microscopic entropy associated to the degeneracy of the ground. So in the classical limit way, far as the zero will go. So I'm happy to discuss that further later. Okay. Okay, so as I said, R is not the physical radius of the ring. And you can actually set it to zero. But if you set it to zero, then the solution is no longer a black ring, but actually reduces to the BNPDC, which is a rotating black hole in five dimensions. It's very compressed, just few miles. And the deeper angular momentum, remember that the difference between the corner and the most proportional mass. So, because of this discontinuous change in the topology when you move forward from R strictly greater than 0 to R equal to 0, there's also this continuous change in here, which means that the area of the BMPV black hole is different and is actually larger than the R going to 0 limit of the area of the black hole. Okay? And this is actually, just to illustrate that, this is a plot in a simple space in which they equal charges of equal dipoles of the BMPV area compared to the R going to 0 limit of the ring. So this discontinuous change in the entropy is not surprising though. It's completely analogous to what happens if you take two extremal random mass from black hole to four dimensions. So you take a two-sided solution with charges Q, each of them. That has an area of Q and Q. For any R that's greater than 0, the Mannhaus model. But you set R to 0, then you get a one-sided solution. And now there's only one connected horizon, and the area jumps to twice the previous one. So the same is happening when you set R equal to 0 for the ring, and you jump to the radio bar. Now, you can...
How about the zero solution for this? It's negative.
Yes, yeah.
The two black holes, the MGs, one is a bit larger and it's smaller. The smaller energy, it's not always staying in the
MGs. I'm not sure I agree with the first thing. So there are two BMP black holes?
But there are two black holes at the same time.
Where?
R going to 0 limit is still a black hole.
Yes.
And that has a smaller entity than the BMP.
Yes. With the same angular momentum.
With the same.
So in the limit R going to 0, the difference between the two angular momentum and the black hole goes to 0. Did it go?
Yeah.
In that limit.
Yeah.
And that's why you can compare to be able to be that one, which always has to put on that.
And both are symmetric.
And both are symmetric. Mm-hmm. So if R is not zero, then the charges of the black ring are always different from the MPV. So black ring always has to be black and white, because the MPV always has the same number.
So there is no sense in this, I think, if you think of somehow this. It's jumps to the R and 0 and the black ring is
no, what it's doing is it's merging. So if you take the black ring and you slice it across, what you have is two black holes. Like you do. So when you send R to 0 on that slice, if you look at that slice, what's happening is that the two black holes are merging. So if you want the inner rim of the ring, merges, and then you're left in the next case for us. But of course, the R equal to 0 limit of the area doesn't mean anything. That's not the entropy of any solution. For R equal to 0, you have to reconstitute the topology and reconstitute the area.
Okay. Well, isn't that actually what we're thinking about?
Yeah. What I'm saying is, I'm saying my
father's formula of A
doesn't
some discontinuous things.
Yes. Okay, you can also take the large frame, RMU frame, in which essentially the ring, rather than remaining in a ring, just becomes, so the circle of the ring becomes a straight line, because you're taking the infinite ring. So in that limit, you recover the solution found by Menel. And one thing that's very important is that in that limit, k psi, which is the one along the ring, becomes a linear one, because that directly becomes a straight line. But j phi goes to zero. So the second angular momentum is not captured by the straight line speed found by Menel. That's okay, so. And in fact, this is required by SO3 rotation invariance, because when it becomes a straight line, you have a full SO3 invariance around. So if you have a second angular momentum, that would break. That's simple. Now, this, I'm mentioning this because this is a very important point in order to try to make a connection between the superiority description, the free charge fields, and the world volume description. So I think that the reason why, so my, this is speculation, but my opinion is that the second angular momentum of J5 should not be attributed and therefore expected to be reproduced by the source itself, as we did for the two charge fields. But I think it's actually generated by the pointing mechanism, by the supergravity fields. So let me explain how it works. If you start with a supergravity with three charges and a straight cross section, you can show that the contribution in J5 that would come from cross electric and magnetic H2s is zero. Okay? In other words, for a straight cross section, those H2s sourced by the source are oriented in such a way that the cross product vanishes. But as soon as you bend the cross section to form the ring, of course the orientation of the H2s changes, and then they generate, they have an opposite of cross product. And that's what gives rise to the J5. So in order to establish the comparison between the superiority description and the source description, you should decide exactly what qualities you're going to attribute to the world volume description in order to compare with superiority description. And just say that J5 should not be expected to be used by the world volume description. Okay, and in fact, this is what happens if you look at the world volume description of the world. So one main difficulty with this description is that if you try to do it in string theory, it seems that there is no way in which you can choose the three charges, for example, these ones here, and the three dipoles in such a way that you only have fundamental strings or D rings. You always have either N side rings or closed high modules. And the problem is that we don't have an order string description of those. So having a word volume description in terms of, say, the D-brains, that we have this two charge case. For the three charge case in the string theory, is a really problematic. I don't see how to do it. However, if you go to M theory, to the configuration we started with, there you can choose all the three charges to be M2-brains, and all the three dipole-brains to be M5-brains. And we do have a word volume description for M5-brains, on which we know how to incorporate the membranes as fluxes. So the construction for the free charge case goes as follows. Forget for a second about the M2 membranes. Consider just the three M5 membranes. The construction is based on the fact that it's well known that if this is a straight line, the common direction, then you can describe the three M5 membranes as a single M5 membrane, whose word volume is basically a line in seven directions, times a two-dimensional convex surface in C, if it's a six-dimensional real space. Okay, and that's known to be a calibrated surface and the calibration form is the wedge rather than the Keller form, the natural Keller form associated with the skin. So all of this, there's a lot of terminology here. If you're not familiar with this, don't worry. All I'm saying is there's a description of the three and five grains in which they appear as a single and five. Provided this is a straight line. And the word volume doesn't have any gauge fixed there, though. It's just geometry. It's just a complex surface. Now, my statement is that if you turn on an appropriate word volume flux for the freeform that leaves from the N5 ring, which is precisely that induced, basically, by the Keller form, then I claim that supersymmetry is still preserved, and in fact, you can replace a straight line like that into a cross section while still using supersymmetry. If the cross section is closed, then this system carries non-N5-way charges for the same reason as the two charge space. And at the same time that you allow the cross section to be curved, by turning on these flux, you induce the appropriate N5-way charges. Is that clear, the statement that I'm making?
And this focus on the plane, right?
Yes, that's so in the paper we saw is very natural. Turn these flaps, do some capacity calculation, and you can show that for any complex surface and any construction, this is
the case. Can you try that for the volume to the top of the pipeline?
Yeah, so if you have a bunch of spinners, you have a transfer spinners, and a two-form gauge field, whose three-form is self-blown. Or generalize stuff. Yes. So what I'm specifying here for you is the field strength. So H is a full form that I'm pulling back, it's a Kelly form pulled back to word volume, wedge with the coordinate along the cross section. And this other thing here, H prime, is the time component which is fixed by self duality in the field. Okay, so this description captures the three die components. Because the three N5 rays are visible, are part of the construction. But it doesn't generate a J5 component. It only generates a component of angular momentum along the cross section. So that's why I was emphasizing before that it's not clear to me that this is a defect of the construction, or just a feature of the way in which you should actually assign the mappings between word volume descriptions and superarguments. In other words, I'm saying that maybe J5 is only generated while you incorporate the back reaction in space. Okay. However, one thing that I most should emphasize is that this is probably not the most complete description you would like to have of this system. Because locally, even though so even in the absence of the membranes, when you view the 3M5 rays as a calibrated surface, locally, that looks like a single M5 ray. It's just that the difference in the only regions of the surface gives you the interpretation of those 3M5 rays. So when you turn on these classes, it's also true still that locally, this looks like a two-charge supercube. So perhaps rather than thinking of this as a three-charge supercube, you should think of this as a junction. As a supersymmetric junction of three charge filaments that's resolved by promoting the word volume to a complex surface. That's what they know as opposed to the same kind of thing. Okay? Okay, and just to finish, I'll say a few words about the connection with the D125 piece system. So, if you start from the solution I presented to you, and you reduce 10 dimensions as the performance number of three qualities and S qualities, you can finally turn it into this one here, where the next charges, as I said, are the D5, D1, and momentum charge. And you also have dipole charges associated with D1, D5, and D5. The solution? Okay, so in order to make contact with the CFD description of the system, you want to take the decoupling. If you set up a prime to zero and you scale all your variables appropriately to the left, we have a road back front from the entry and find out what it is. So if you do that, you get a solution that's quite complicated. It's quite important. But which has a nice interpretation of an RT flow, because asymptotically at the boundary, the geometry is AES3 plus S3 plus P4, where the radius both of the AES space and the sphere is set by the net charges in the unit, which are the defined of the human charges. And the RT flow is such that in the infrared, you also recover locally an AES3 plus S3 plus P4 flow, in general, an S3 modified by discrete group, where the radius is again the same of these two factors, but it's smaller than the one that you read as first class in respect from the central charge for central charge increasing along the RG mode. But I should say that the way which these two radius differences be spaced between the UV and infrared is quite different. So there's a very non-trivial interpolation between that turns one into the zone. It's not just, it's far from frequent.
Is that more related to the dual CFC that would run its code?
That's a very good question. Actually, I haven't. So the best I can tell you about that is that I think what's happening is that you're starting from. So presumably, because of this geometry is totally the same as 3 plus 3, you're starting from the same CFD as you start to the axis of the diamond. But because of the diamond, you're starting in a very non-trivial line. It's a different value. So that's actually what's driving. So in that vacuum, something is extremely more massive. And when you run the article to the infrared, those decouple. And the life ones for the mass, those that remain mass was actually interpreted on the different instruments. But I don't know, and actually I don't think anybody knows, to be honest. Not only what the information operator is, you know, but of course what the object goes through. I should say, however, that despite what I just said, there is a proposal for reproducing the entropy of the library, which doesn't really make use of these descriptions so much, but it makes use of some methodological assumption by Mayer and Krauss, which basically runs to the following. So they notice that the angular momenta of a supersymmetric black wave have two perturbations. This one here, J5, is a BMGB-like perturbation. It's exactly what's left if you set R to 0, in which case the solution reduces exactly to the BMGB value. And it's known that that angular momentum in the CFT description is carried by the fermion momentum modes. But there's also a super tube-like perturbation, which is what you have if you set one of the charges at two dipoles to two. In that case, you go back to the two charge case, and the angular momentum is given by this expression. And that's that angular momentum is probably carried by the fermion zero mode. So the assumption they make is that the conformative theory, which leads on the common intersection of this effective stream, splits into two parts. One of them gives you these contributions, and the other one gives you these ones. And essentially, making rapid speaking, making that assumption, they are able to, again, rapid speaking, reproduce more or less the formula for the energy for the area that I showed, which is actually quite complicated when you express it in the different charges. So I think that's, I would say, the state of the art about the CFD description of these systems. Okay, I'll finish with that.
Thank you.
show that there were three parameters in this system. Is there some analog of the unique set to show that there are no more parameters in the world?
No, so this